Coming to you live from the planet Dayu, it's the Movie Change Up Podcast Disney Plus Weekly Review. Where each week I, Joseph Fricke, and my co-host Tristan Mayer break down this week in Disney Plus. And hey, it's Star Wars Celebration weekend, and we had the premiere of Obi-Wan Kenobi, so it's a lot to break down. And in fact, Disney Plus was like, hey, if you don't think you have a lot to cover this weekend, we're going to dump the making of Moon Knight on you as well for you to cover. So it's going to be a jam-packed week, and I say, I kind of broke down what we're going to talk about. A lot of Star Wars, a little bit of Marvel, maybe a little bit of something else. But Tristan, the week of Disney Plus was pretty thin. The weekend of Disney Plus, pretty heavy. So I say, I know kind of what your thoughts are on this week on Disney Plus. So let's just get to it with the Obi-Wan Kenobi premiere. It's something we've been waiting for since 2005, really. Finally get a chance to see Ewan McGregor step into the role of Obi-Wan Kenobi, see a little bit of what he was doing on Tatooine in the 19 years between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope. You know, I talked before last week on the show that I had read plot leaks, and it turns out pretty much a lot of those plot leaks, if not all of them, were true. And I thought going into this that, hey, if it's executed well, I think the general consensus is going to be this is the best Star Wars since the 80s. And honestly, for me, I thought it was executed well. Maybe some of the shots could have been better, but as far as the story and the writing and everything, I thought it was done really well, and I'm still surprised at the level of divisiveness. Some of the people just hating on stuff that I didn't even think were negatives in my mind. But Tristan, what were your kind of general basic thoughts on the first two episodes of Obi-Wan Kenobi before we start getting into some of the finer details?
Yeah, I will say I'm positive on it overall. I think I'm more negative than you are because I do have some problems with it, and there's definitely some of the action and some of the effects still kind of just do not seem to live up to the budget and the potential here. Like, you compare the budget of this show to other TV shows that look so much better than this does, and it makes you wonder, like, where are they putting this money? But clearly they're putting it in the cast because we have Ewan back. We had some great performances here. A lot of, like, great setting of the stakes, you know? So I think that's what's interesting about this first episode is you do get a great picture of what the show is going to be going forward. When I watched something like Book of Boba Fett, we get out of the first episode, I was like, all right, I guess that was just kind of a random event. There wasn't quite the momentum that I feel like this has. So I really feel like this was a good start, and I'm curious to see if the action kind of ups as they go along. You know, they cited that the action is going to be kind of prequel inspired, so I'm hoping that we get some kind of like big scale action battle, especially when the lightsabers come out. You know, I want to see some fights, something big. Pay off that budget, Disney. Come on.
Yeah, and one of the things I'm curious about as well is I don't know if you agree. Like, a lot of Book of Boba Fett, I feel like as far as the live action Star Wars television, probably looked the weakest. But I felt far and away the best visually looking episodes were the two episodes that focused on the Mandalorian. So I'm curious if this is going to be similar in that way, where a lot of their visual effects and a lot of, like, their budget was heavily focused more on, like, hey, we want Obi-Wan Kenobi versus Darth Vader to look amazing. We want this to be cinema quality. So that's more where their budget was focused. And it's going to be, like, high, explosive, great visuals and all that. So I think I'm just curious to see where it's going to go. And right now I have Obi-Wan Kenobi going on in the background, and I have probably the most divisive scene in the whole first two episodes, and that is the spoiler alert, Princess Leia chase scene where Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers is chasing down Princess Leia along with a bunch of goons. And I'm watching it right now, and honestly, I don't get the hate, but you know, it is what it is. Tristan, kind of what are your thoughts on this? Because I know you're a very different opinion on this scene than I am.
Yeah, are we getting into the spoiler territory? I know you just kind of said the big one, I think, that people didn't know going into this.
I feel like if you're watching a Disney Plus weekly review, you've seen Obi-Wan Kenobi, the first two episodes, or you just have no desire to.
Well, yeah, I do want to talk about that specific scene because I did have, I mean, that scene is kind of a lot of the problems I have with Star Wars in general right now is that the action doesn't seem to have a lot of stakes to it. Not a lot of great like cinematography, not a lot of great effects. It's not necessarily like, oh, it's goofy that this girl is running away from this guy. It's more so like it's filmed like a CW show, and she looks kind of goofy jumping around on the rooftops like that. You know, I think there's plenty of better ways you could do that, you know, and maybe get her in the streets bouncing around across a bunch of aliens. And I want to see like the Star Wars aliens, give me more aliens. Maybe that's an excuse to get her out on the more believable situation. You know, she's kind of sneaking around on some market or something like that, more so than jumping on the rooftops. But yeah, I don't really want to harp on that scene in particular, because I do really like Leia in this episode. I think it was a great twist to have her be the plot device, not Luke, because all focused on Tatooine. So you weren't expecting Leia to show up and be kind of the one he has to rescue.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, their biggest problem going into this show is like there was going to be zero reason for them ever to believe that Obi-Wan would leave Luke behind and go off Tatooine. And they found, I think, the number one perfect reason that Obi-Wan would leave Tatooine, and for people to understand why Obi-Wan would leave Tatooine is Leia. If Leia is in imminent danger and potential death, and even it was like a little bit of a struggle, he wasn't like, all right, I'm gonna pack my bags and go. Like, I'm watching the scene right now. They send him the hologram of, we need your help. And he was just like, I think I'm good. You know, I think I'm going to chill. And it wasn't until Bail eventually, you know, shows up that he decides to go. And I think that was the perfect reason. There was imminent danger. And I think the actress, if you had asked me 5 days ago, do you have any interest in a young Leia Disney Plus series that's like aimed for like girls specifically, but kids under 12, I would be like, no, I have zero desire to see that. But if they were like, hey, we like this girl so much, we're going to make a, you know, Leia and the young Jedi, or not young Jedi, young, like, Senate or whatever. It's the junior, Leia and the Junior Senate series starring this girl. It's going to be a series aimed at, you know, kids under 12. I'd be interested in watching it. Because I think she did a great job as Leia. I thought it was a perfect young Leia. I would have loved to have seen Carrie Fisher's reaction to this girl playing Leia. But
yeah, I really liked her casting a lot. I think she has that kind of spunky attitude, but it doesn't feel like she's kind of over-delivering it. You know, it does fit with the character really well. It fits with the look of the girl really well. I think it's a great casting. And I really loved her introduction scene when she just kind of, you know, you go to Alderaan and you kind of put the pieces together of who these people are, and then they're like trying to find Leia, and she's replaced herself with one of her friends, I believe, to kind of like trick her parents, and now she's running out doing some her own kind of rebellion thing. I love that the Skywalkers all have this kind of like rebellious edge and this like will to get away from whatever kind of binds them to where they are. You know, even as a princess, she wants to get and do something new and some kind of discover a new world, the same way Luke is doing the same thing right now on Tatooine. You know, I love the parallels of that in the episode.
Yeah, Anakin was stuck on Tatooine and he wanted to get off. He wanted to be the first person to see every planet. Luke felt the same way about Tatooine. He felt stuck there and he, you know, wanted to go away. And then you find out Leia kind of felt the same way about Alderaan. People have made these jokes for basically the last 40 years that, oh, Leia got to be this great, like, princess and have this lavish lifestyle while Luke was stuck on some backwoods random desert planet. But really, they kind of had to both had the same views of where they were. Leia, you know, called her palace a prison. And it's kind of interesting to see that parallel run through the Skywalker family.
Yeah, and I think in some ways, like, if Luke would see her life and think, oh, I would love to be that, you know, and I wonder if Leia would see something like Luke's life, the freedom to be living on your own with no kind of expectations of life as a princess. Would she be jealous of that life? And there's kind of that, like, grass is always the greener on the other planet, you know?
Yeah, and I do agree with your sentiment as far as more aliens. That is my number one biggest complaint on the show, and I feel like it is a fairly big and valid complaint. Like, I look at characters like Benny Safdie's character, the Jedi, who went to Obi-Wan for help. Like, why couldn't that be an alien? Why couldn't... like, it seems like there were aliens in the series, but they were all, like, background characters. It didn't feel like any... Other than the Grand Inquisitor, who was a legacy character, so he kind of has to be the species he is. And even people complained about the look of that. Like, why couldn't Kumail Nanjiani? I mean, you can still bring in Kumail Nanjiani as the actor, but why couldn't he play a Twi'lek? Why couldn't Flea play a Zabrak? Like, why is there just so many humans in this show?
Yeah, and I do like Camille Nanjiani, but he definitely felt out of place a little bit. You know, it felt like Camille Nanjiani showing up and doing a bit in a movie, you know, randomly in this scene. And I liked the character arc overall. I liked that he was kind of like this sham Jedi that Obi-Wan saw right through. It feels like something you'd find on the Clone Wars. You know, they show up and find this random guy saying he's a Jedi, and then he walks in, and then, of course, it's not at all like that. But he doesn't just... It's like a bad guy that disappears. You know, he has that hope that Jedi inspire in people, where he's like, you know what, I want to actually kind of turn my life around. I want to go home and rethink my life. You know, that's kind of what Obi-Wan inspires him to do.
Yeah, and I do like that his character, that very much could have made him like a gross kind of like villain bad guy. But I mean, at the end of the day, he was still helping people. He was just taking money for it. And I mean, he was lying about who he was, but I feel like he was genuinely like sending families to where he was saying he was sending them. I don't think he was taking their money and then like having them kidnapped and sold into slavery or anything like that. But one kind of in that little segment, do you remember the character who Obi-Wan looked at and said, "I'm looking for my daughter," and the young actress replied like, "Oh, I had a father once."
I do. I remember that.
Do you know who the actress was that says that?
Do not have any idea.
That would be Ewan McGregor's actual daughter.
Oh. Well, that's a fun connection. You wonder if that was who he was talking about all the way back in the day when he said, "Oh, I'm happy to act with someone that I've always wanted to act with."
I think I forgot that he said that, and looking back, that's 100% who he was talking about. I completely forgot that he said that, and that's definitely who he was talking about. A lot of people thought he was talking about Mary Elizabeth Winstead, his now wife, because that was around the time there were rumors going around she was cast as Hera. And so, but yeah, that's definitely who he was talking about. Unless maybe he's a low-key Red Hot Chili Peppers fan, and he has a scene where him and Flea eventually interact, but...
Yeah, there are some good little cameos here, not just of Ewan McGregor's daughter, though. You get the... Tamara Morrison shows up in like a legit cameo, you know, laying there, doesn't even have a line, just kind of as an abandoned clone veteran. He has a, I think he
might like a midline of just like, "Hey, help me out, I'm a veteran of the Clone Wars." And that was legitimately, I think, my favorite moment. That and the very like final 10 seconds of episode 2. But I think that's probably my favorite moment, because there, you can just tell there's so much going through Obi-Wan's head, because to an extent he probably feels at fault for everything bad that happened to that guy's life. Number one, I think a lot of people have surmised based on his armor that he was a member of the 501st, which was him and Anakin's unit. So number one, that, but also Obi-Wan's thinking like, if I never go looking for Jango and I never, you know, investigate that saber dart and do all this, maybe the Clone Wars happens later and this guy just like gets to live a normal life and he's not sitting here in the gutter begging for money.
Yeah, and of course he feels the guilt that like he feels like maybe he caused the entire collapse of the Republic, you know, that he failed raising Anakin the way he did, and that was ultimately the downfall of the whole thing. And if he had helped Anakin, I think that's going to be his core arc here, that he needs to get over that guilt of failing with Anakin. And he has a realization here. I remember I asked last week, I wonder if he's going to know that Anakin is Vader or not when we start the series. And he has that realization, at least, of Anakin being alive still. And that was a cool moment. You know, it ends right at the end of the episode too. You mentioned it as one of your favorite moments. And I think it's a great setup, because I think that's definitely the guilt he has here, because we open the episode with him being kind of lost, as we kind of predicted, out kind of by himself in the desert. But that would have been a long show of just him doing that. So I think he's going to be able to get over his guilt of Anakin through some direct action here with Leia. And I'm really curious how this is going to unravel, because we already have kind of the characters and the places to get them back to where they're supposed to be. So there's got to be some kind of like extra wrench thrown in here somewhere. I'm really excited to see kind of what the next narrative leap is here for the next episodes.
Yeah, and two things that I wanted to touch on really quick and then ask you a question. One thing is, I think we're definitely getting to get like the thing of that's always kind of been a plot hole, is Vader saying to Luke in episode 5, "Obi-Wan once thought as you did," which I think is very clearly basically the, you know, the tagline of this show of like explaining that line in Obi-Wan. I feel like when Obi-Wan first goes to Anakin, he's going to feel like he can save him, like he can redeem him. And obviously, because we've seen the movies and we know that ultimately Obi-Wan isn't the one who redeems him, that it doesn't work out that way. And two, a thing I don't remember if I talked about on here, but one of the things that has always annoyed me every time I've watched A New Hope is, and that I think they finally fixed, and I think within the next few episodes it will confirm it's been fixed, is Luke in Stormtrooper armor shows up to Leia, who's been captive, and he's like, I'm Luke Skywalker, I'm here to rescue you, and I'm here with Ben Kenobi. And Leia stands up and, like, excited but kind of surprised, yells out, Ben Kenobi! Which has always bothered me, because at that point in time, Leia has never heard the name Ben Kenobi. She's only known the name Obi-Wan Kenobi, and why would she even have any reason to believe he's hiding out under the name Ben Kenobi? And so now, through this show, she knows there was this guy named Ben Kenobi who was a Jedi who saved her when she was a little girl, and she thought she was reaching out to this other Jedi named Obi-Wan Kenobi, who was a Jedi general who served with her father. And, I mean, we have Captain Antilles, who was on the ship in episode 4 that got raided that Leia was on. And then you have Wedge Antilles, the pilot, the rebel pilot, and the two aren't related. So it'd be like, in our world, having two people with the name Jackson or Smith or Williams, you wouldn't necessarily assume they're related. There were 10,000 Jedi. It's reason to believe a few of them had the same last name. So, Leia stands up all excited and surprised because Ben Kenobi's here, because she's like, oh my god, the guy that saved me when I was a little girl. She's not thinking, oh, the guy I was trying to reach out to and send a message to. So I think that's kind of a little fun connection.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here to put all little pieces together, Joe, because I would not be thinking like, oh, but what about the line where Leia says this about Ben Kenobi? Like, that's never something that's ever been a problem for me. So I'm glad you're here to be like, oh, they're actually thinking about this little tiny thing in the other movie. But I do have a Leia theory if you want to hear my Leia theory, Joe.
Okay, I can't wait to hear it. And then
we see in the third sister, I think, is the one we're seeing right now.
Reva.
We see, yeah. Reva, she has the power to kind of essentially read somebody's mind. You know, she withdraws information from someone in an interrogation to find the Jedi, whether they tell her or not. And it was very kind of a scary scene where she's like pulling the right out of his head, you know, with like sort of like Kylo Ren does in The Force Awakens. You know, you have this really intense kind of violent way of extracting memory with the Force, and then you switch to Leia, and I think we're seeing Leia. She has this kind of intuitive empathy where she's talking to Obi-Wan, and she's kind of knows more about him than she kind of should, about his past and his kind of emotional state. And he has even like, how old are you? Like, you're a little more knowledgeable than you probably should be for like a 10-year-old or whatever she is here. And earlier in the episode, she kind of takes down her cousin, you know, who is kind of being rude to her and saying, you're not even really, you know,
an Organa
member of the family. And then she kind of like eviscerates him and goes to like all his little tiny crevices of his self-doubt and destroys his like soul. And I was like, how does she, it's kind of, she knows just exactly what to say at the right time to hurt this person. And I think we're kind of supposed to learn here that Leia is tapping into the Force at these points and kind of reading their minds and getting information that they're not letting on. And in the one scene, she's using it kind of aggressively, kind of tapping into the darker side of it by kind of attacking her cousin and being kind of vengeful and spiteful. And then versus the Obi-Wan side, she's very kind of empathetic. And through that, she learns about Obi-Wan's past and his kind of emotional state. And I think that carries on into the trilogy too, where you see Leia's kind of always been kind of the intuitive member of the trio. When Luke goes to tell her that she is his sister, she kind of already knows. She says, oh, you're my brother. Of course, I've always known. Somehow I've always known, something like that. And I think that plays into this too. I wonder if they're trying to make us now think like Leia had some kind of forced revelation where she kind of read Luke's mind and kind of felt that connection the whole time, even though she didn't necessarily know what it was. Yeah, so I wonder if they're going to have her be kind of a foil to the third sister here, where they're both having a similar ability, but one from the empathy kind of caring side and one from like this vicious, angry, violent side.
Yeah, and like to piggyback off your theory, like I remember there was a moment that people talk about a lot as like a part of Leia's character is towards the end of episode 4, Obi-Wan's dead. Obviously, Alderaan is blown up. And, like, Luke's just sitting there sad and dejected. And, like, Leia goes and, like, puts a blanket around him or, like, gives him, like, a hug or something. And it's like, this guy just lost, like, a guy that he kind of knew a little bit for a couple days. Leia's whole planet, everything she's ever known, everyone she's ever loved, is now just blown into a million pieces. And she's still the one that's comforting him. And so I think that could definitely play into it, and I'd definitely be interested in to see that be part of it. I know, and I think it was the book Leia, Princess of Alderaan, there's a little bit of her unknowingly tapping into the Force. I can't remember fully what it was, but she was, like, running over something, and there was kind of a gap, and she just, like, knew she could make it, and she jumped over the gap, and she looked back, and she kind of had a thought that, like, that was a little far, like, I shouldn't have been able to jump over that, but then just kind of quickly, I mean, she was being chased, so she kept on going. And I thought we were going to get a moment of that in this show. Like, we were going to see her kind of unknowingly use the Force a little bit to make a jump that a normal 10-year-old girl can make. One last thing, just because saying 10-year-old girl got into my mind, is I see a lot of people complaining about the moment where Obi-Wan asked Leia how old she was. A lot of people are like, that's stupid, that's bad writing. Why is he asking her how old she is? He was at her birth. I held pretty much all of my nieces and nephews at the hospital where they were born, like, hours after they were born. I couldn't accurately tell you any of their ages. Just because he was at their birth doesn't mean he quite remembers how long ago it was, especially when your life is as monotonous as Obi-Wan Kenobi's used to be. I'm sure if you asked him how many years ago Order 66 was, he would say probably somewhere between, like, 8 and 12 years ago. I don't think he's exactly the type to, like, keep a calendar and write everything down.
It's also a joke. Like, he's making a joke because he's shocked that she's so intelligent, and he's like, what? How old are you? Because she seems older than he knows that she is. Like, he's not actually asking, wait, how old are you again? He's making a joke.
Yeah, and also the whole thing of, that's why when people have, like, such negative reviews of the show, I kind of dismiss it, because I saw so many people where he was like, oh, you remind me of someone. She was stubborn and she was a great leader. Being like, oh my God, he was talking about Satine. He was referencing Satine. No, he was definitely referencing Padme, the mother of the girl he was talking to, and also the wife of his best friend and someone he hung out with all of the time. And also someone that general and casual Star Wars fans would know, and not someone in four episodes of an animated series. But, you know,
I thought for a second it might have been Ahsoka, but then he said something about, oh, she wasn't a fighter, she was a leader. And I said, oh, it's Padme.
Yeah. Like, Ahsoka I would buy, especially with them setting her up and trying to do more with her. But other than that, do you have much you need to say about part one and two? Any speculation for further episodes beyond what we talked about?
I'm really looking forward to what's next. I know they teased Vader at the end of this episode, and I think we might get, like, a scene or so next week, but I kind of think they're going to want to keep us a little baited along before we get to the big ultimate Vader Obi-Wan clash. You know, I don't know, maybe they're going to bait and switch us, but I have a feeling that it's going to come maybe a couple episodes from now. We're going to get a bit more of kind of setting the stakes and upping the action, getting an idea of where, like, Vader is at this point in, like, his timeline, you know, because you can guess based on comics, but as we know, comic books are, like, they'll come in when they want to, but they'll ignore them when they want to, and I think that's kind of a funny way to do it. So it'll be interesting to see where Vader's at, and how much Hayden we get, how much of Vader in the costume we get, and even if that comes next week at all. I am honestly really excited to see more of this Leia and this Obi-Wan together. I want to see their dynamic kind of grow. I love these stories that are like, oh, the grumpy old guy and then the kind of young, spunky kid, and they have to learn to get along together. You know, it happens a million times over. Even in Star Wars, you've seen it like four times. But, you know, I like it every time, so let's make it a good one.
I'm a big fan of, like, big, grumpy, burly, I don't have emotions guy and the kind of spunky girl, you know. I love Man on Fire. I love Logan. I love Leon the Professional, which had Natalie Portman. Kind of was her big breakout role. So, hey, you know, let's put it in Star Wars.
Oh my God, if we get an Natalie Portman cameo in the show, I'll be so happy, Joe.
I mean, Ewan McGregor hinted at some Clone Wars flashbacks, so I wouldn't be all too shocked. She's in the Disney family. She's about to be in Thor: Love and Thunder. Probably got to put her in some heavy robes to cover up them guns, but you know it is.
You're breaking my heart. I'm already crying, Joe.
All right. Well, I think you're not because of what we were just talking about, but I think you will be a big fan of the beginning of part 3 of Obi-Wan Kenobi. I'll just leave it at that before we move on to our next topic, which is the making of Moon Knight. Something I haven't watched. Tristan has watched it twice. I'm going to be honest. All these making of Moon Knight things, or not making Moon Knight, but all these like making of Marvel things, whether it's the movies or the shows, they're all the same. They're all just giant puff pieces for their product. They, if anything bad happens, they never bring it up. They kind of are just like, oh, it's really fun making it. I really enjoyed this character. I'm really happy we got to bring this character to a larger audience. And then they'll focus on one aspect of production, whether it's the costume design, special effects, you know, whatever, and they go hard on that for 20 minutes, but the rest is just kind of generally, they don't really say a whole lot. But Tristan, tell me I'm wrong. Talk about the making of Moon Knight.
Well, in this one, they kind of talked briefly about how much they love making Moon Knight, and then they went really hard in on the performances and talked about the performances about 20 minutes. And when
when you have two of the greatest actors, one super underrated and one who's kind of gives me the vibe of like Al Pacino in his prime with Oscar Isaac. Yeah, of course they talk about the performances. Cause I think Ethan Hawke's about to crush it in The Black Phone, so yeah.
But they actually did a pretty good job with this one of like covering a pretty strong variety of things. And, you know, they brought in the directors. I know Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead were two that I was previously invested in because they'd done a lot of like really, really indie sci-fi stuff and then randomly got tapped to do this Marvel show, so I was kind of hyped to see what they would do, and it was cool to see them talk about their inspirations in making this. And I never thought I would get to hear the endless name dropped on a Disney Plus show, but all of a sudden they're talking about like these micro budget sci-fi movies they worked on and how they kind of brought that onto this, so that was kind of fun to see. And they also talked about bringing Cairo to life and making Egypt look kind of like Egypt really does, even though they weren't even filming in Egypt. They were filming in England somewhere at the time, but they kind of rebuilt this whole street to be as accurate to Cairo as they could make it, and they kind of took the effort to really make it look like an actual city, because the other third director, whose name I can't pick off the top of my head now, he had expressed some dissent towards movies like Wonder Woman 84 previously for like how they depict Egypt as like this ancient desert with like these madmen and stuff like that. And he's like, look, that's not really what Egypt is. Of course there are deserts, but like there's also huge cities and like skyscraping metropolises like any other country is. And I think this show made a good point of portraying Egypt as like an actual advanced modern civilization and not like something you would get out of like an 80s comic book necessarily.
Yeah, I feel like Indiana Jones is partially to blame for kind of people's belief are like the visualization of the Middle East, because whenever I picture the Middle East, I just picture like the Indiana Jones version of the Middle East, which I feel like has then inspired a lot of films and TV shows after it. And so
yeah, they talked about Indiana Jones a lot in here as kind of their one of their inspirations for like this adventure kind of the week kind of feel to it, like we're going to get in these pyramids, we're going to kind of unleash these ancient spirits. And that really kind of did bring me back to the stuff I liked about the show and the kind of fun adventure serial of it, where it wasn't connected at all to the Marvel Universe, and they talked about how that kind of let them be very free to kind of cherry pick and do whatever they really wanted to do. And they mentioned how comic books are so exciting and so vibrant because a new artist can come in and like totally change the character and do whatever they want with them, and all of a sudden the character is like seen differently. And Moon Knight's gone through multiple really big transformations, and people have their kind of versions they like the most, and there's like really iconic runs that are kind of definitive Moon Knight runs. But so they talked about kind of the struggle of bringing all of those different versions of the character together into the show and being able to kind of tribute all of those different styles in ways that if you aren't a comic reader, you don't really notice. But like the fact that he goes to this all white asylum and he's kind of like wrapped up in this white cloth is a reference kind of directly to some pretty famous Moon Knight arcs. Even if they don't necessarily follow those, it's kind of cool that they're actively paying tribute to the stuff that people read in the classics.
Yeah. So,
and there's always cool details, like Mark's, like Steven's bed looking like a sarcophagus in the beginning episodes, and there's like these kind of little things hinted at in the set design that kind of makes you think, oh, something's not quite right in this, in these opening couple episodes, that hint towards like the Egyptian mythology is going to come later. So that's the kind of stuff I like about these specials. They bring out the details, you know, and make me kind of appreciate more of that stuff that I might have missed not really seeing it in the original run of the show.
One question I had for you when watching it, did you feel like they were kind of hinting at a possible season two, or like that they felt like a season two was coming, or did this very much feel like they're like, nope, we made the show, we're done with the show, have fun?
Yep. It was interesting because all the other ones have had like, oh, you know, we'll see what happens kind of vibes at the end. But this one definitely felt like they were kind of definitively like, oh, it was fun to do this thing and now we're kind of done with it, you know. And especially the actors felt like, oh, yeah, I kind of came in and it was cool to like be a part of this and then move on, you know. And Ethan Hawke talked about like he told the story about like right after he got approached for the role, he was sitting in a coffee shop and Oscar Isaac walks in. And spontaneously, they had this conversation about how they're both in talks for the same show at the same time. And that kind of inspired Ethan Hawke to say yes, because he knew he'd be working with Oscar Isaac. So those are kind of the cool little touches that I like.
Yeah.
And he talked about like them staying in character. Oscar Isaac talked about how he had to stay in character a lot to keep them straight of like which personality he was at each time, because he was having a hard time at first finding like the physicality and the difference between the performances. So I really think like the actors had this fun one-off little experience, but they didn't sound like they were coming back at all. That doesn't mean they won't dump a bunch of money back at their doors, and we'll hear in a couple of weeks about Moon Knight season two. But I wouldn't, because they also talked in interviews, I don't know about in here, but in other interviews about how they were drawn to this because they weren't going to be signing those like death warrants of like, oh, you're signed for 7 movies now and you got to be in 8 TV appearances, and they're like, oh, there goes, you know, 20 years of my career, you know. They signed up for this one single thing and that's it, so whatever happens next is going to be a whole new negotiation, you know.
Yeah, that's very interesting to see, because I'm very curious. Like, there was nothing where I felt like maybe 5 years down the line I'm like, oh, this is what Moon Knight set up, where they didn't need those characters, it was more these ideas they were setting up. But nothing really from Moon Knight I saw was like, oh, they were like, they didn't need Moon Knight anymore. It's not like, like if they didn't make another Guardians of the Galaxy, it's like, okay, but they still set up kind of the Infinity Stones and used the whole space thing to explain that in a movie where it fit, and like, I get it. But like, I didn't really see anything from Moon Knight where it's like, oh, this, I mean, maybe the gods, the Egyptian gods, but what else connected to the MCU is really like Egyptian gods, so who knows.
And I still wouldn't be surprised to see him show up for appearances in other shows. You know, when they bring on more horror-oriented characters, it'd be a good place to bring in Moon Knight, you know, maybe for a crossover series type of a thing. And because Oscar Isaac did say he was talking to Marvel for, like, years, trying to figure out the right character to get him into the universe, and he wanted to be a part of it. And they offered him a couple of different roles, and he said no. And then eventually, this is the one that he said yes to. So I think he has an attachment to it, at least. So I wouldn't be surprised if he eventually comes back, even for just fun one-off appearances in the next Avengers or whatever they do.
Yeah, that could be fun. All right, anything else you want to say about the making of Moon Knight, or do you want to move on?
No, pretty good. I'm looking forward to if there's any future of Moon Knight, but if this is just a one-off thing, you know, it was a really solid experiment from Marvel, the cool kind of offshoot tonally and creatively, and I hope that this inspires him to do more stuff kind of off the wall and not necessarily continuing the one storyline that's going on or something like that.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so our next topic is something that dropped during Star Wars Celebration, which is a little bit Lucasfilm Celebration, but hey, when you've got a bunch of your fans all in a place together with all of the media's eyes on you, why not drop a project for something else? And that is the trailer for Willow, starring Warwick Davis. It's a continuation of the movie from the 80s that starred Warwick Davis and Val Kilmer. And I'll be honest, neither Tristan or I have seen the original movie, I believe directed by Ron Howard. And this one was kind of showran by Jake Kasdan. Or is it Jake Kasdan? I don't know. It's the Kasdan that is the son of the Kasdan involved in the original Star Wars. Basically, he grew up a big Willow fan, and he, like, for years and years and years, was trying to get some kind of Willow project off the ground. And then obviously he wrote Solo, which had a Warwick Davis cameo. So he met Warwick there and told him, like, hey, one day, you know, Willow 2, I'm going to get it happen. I'm going to make Willow 2. And then here we are. He was telling that that story at Star Wars Celebration. I thought that was really cool that, like, even 4 or 5 years ago, he was trying to get, you know, trying to, like, force this project on the ground, force it to happen. So I'm happy for him. I'm going to be honest, one of your big complaints that you have about the Star Wars is kind of like it very much like feels like it's on a soundstage and it doesn't exactly feel like the budget's there. And I felt that very strongly watching this trailer. There were a lot of shots where I'm like, oh, there's the volume. There's, you know, there's where the set just stops. And I'm curious to watch it. Just the passion behind everyone in it made me want to watch the original movie and made me want to watch this series. So, I mean, I'll definitely watch the first episode, and if it sucks, I don't really have an emotional attachment to it, so I'll probably just stop watching it. But Tristan, you just watched the trailer for the first time. What are your general thoughts? Did it make you excited to see Willow?
It made me feel like it's definitely something I'll watch, you know, and it's easily that suddenly shows would come out and I watch one trailer and immediately I'm like, okay, I'm not checking that one out. But honestly, like, I'd be in for the season for this. I like a fantasy adventure. I like the idea of like all these creatures and the kind of flying big birds and kind of the underwater. There's a shot of like an underwater kind of fish monster coming out, and I love that kind of adventure feel to it. And you talk about like Indiana Jones feel, kind of going for like that Amblin Studios feel, and this is going to definitely go for that. So I'd be in for it. I like kind of a creature adventure family fantasy, so I definitely would check this out. And it'll be interesting because there's 3 big epic fantasy shows going at the same time this summer. we have Game of Thrones has a prequel show coming out, and Lord of the Rings has a prequel show coming out on Amazon Prime, and now Willow is coming out on Disney Plus. So we all have like these 3 giant fantasy epics leading the streaming platforms this year. It'll be curious to see which of them takes off. I have a feeling that Willow might not have the production value of the other two, but we'll see. It could be the surprise hit, you know, it could be the WandaVision of fantasy epics.
Imagine if they just came at Willow with like a Game of Thrones budget. They're like, we're going to do $10 million an episode. We're just, you know, top to bottom, like a phenomenal cast. But yeah, I know they said Mad Mardigan, who was played by Val Kilmer in the original. And obviously Val Kilmer has cancer and he can't really speak anymore. But they said that the character has like a very large presence in this show. So I'm curious to see what that means necessarily, even if the character itself doesn't appear. My theory is it probably is because Willow's with a group of kids. My guess is one of those kids, if not a few of those kids, are descendants of Mad Mardigan, would be my thought. But I don't know. I haven't seen the movie, so.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to watch it before this comes out, though, because this turned me into being kind of interested to check it out because, yeah, like I said, I love the adventure style. There's, like, sword fights going on and that kind of thing. I feel like it could give us some of the epic adventure stuff. This honestly looks like a step above some of the stuff we saw on other Star Wars shows once in a while. So, you know, I'll see how it goes.
So Willow drink along at some point on the Disney.
I feel like we gotta do it right before the show comes out.
Movie change up, yeah, that's a perfect idea. Maybe like the weekend or 2 before it comes out, we do a drink along, watch Willow for the first time. We're just making up rules, having no idea. We're just like every time they say Willow, we drink, and we're like, that's gonna be a rule. And by the end of it, we're just passed out because there's a song where they just say Willow over and over and over.
Yeah, we forgot about the Willow rap song.
All right. Anything else you got to say about Willow before we go to our next trailer?
Nope. I'm looking forward to it.
So, all right. As I said, Star Wars Celebration weekend. So a lot of Star Wars news dropping, you know, it varies a little bit, but I think they found a happy medium as far as kind of what release. Like I remember a few years ago where there was like an announcement that Thrawn was going to be in the next season of Star Wars Rebels. I think that's when Star Wars Celebration was in London, and that was like really the only major news at all to come out of Star Wars Celebration besides like a few like comic releases and not like novel titles and stuff like that. But I think there was a Star Wars Celebration Chicago after that, and with this one, I think they found a balance of like, okay, we're going to keep maybe some exclusive trailers and exclusive things for people here, so the people here feel like they have a reason to come. But we're also going to have like these announcements, especially with Disney Plus and more shows, they have more to announce, I feel, other than just movies. So with that, the first topic from Star Wars Celebration we're going to cover is the Andor trailer. And I think a lot of people are sleeping on this show. And I think this show they announced it's going to be 2 seasons, 12 episodes each. The first season is going to be 5 years before Rogue One. And it's going to kind of cover, I believe, the first year of, or like 5 years to 4 years before Rogue One. And the second season is going to cover the next 4 years leading up to Rogue One. So I'll be curious to see maybe how the episodes are broken up. Are there time skips between episodes? Are these episodes more kind of like Clone Wars arcs, where you have like 3 episodes that tell a story and then there's some type of time jump and then you have 3 more episodes that are kind of like a singular story? Don't really know. Apparently it's a massive cast. Tony Gilroy, who's the showrunner who kind of did the reshoots for Rogue One, basically said there's 120 speaking parts and like 75 of them are large important parts. So see how it goes. It's also kind of a two-hander where you're seeing Cassian Andor's kind of rise and his joining of the rebellion, as well as Mon Mothma going from just a regular senator to kind of the leader of the rebellion. And so curious to see how that works and how that kind of navigates. But the trailer looked cool. I think a lot of the shots in the trailer to me looked cinematic. If they were like, this is the trailer for the Andor movie, I wouldn't think it was a low budget movie. But Tristan, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, this trailer actually looked really, really good to me. I thought it was a great tone throughout. It had like that almost like Robert Eggers eeriness to it, with like the gong at the beginning kind of like carrying out through the whole entire rest of the trailer. And I love the tenseness of them kind of all kind of hiding and gathering up, and you know that there's this big destruction kind of coming, and then you just see the kind of the Republic ships come down and you realize what's about to happen. And I'm really excited to see this show. We talked about Willow making us kind of interested to watch the original movie, and this made me like immediately want to pull up Disney Plus and watch Rogue One, because it had that same kind of like militaristic war on the outskirts kind of feel that Rogue One had, that I really liked about Rogue One. And the action is that what you would love about Rogue One. You know, even if the characters had some flaws towards the beginning of the movie, I think when the movie was firing on all cylinders, it was really doing some great Star Wars work. And I think this is a chance to be a great Star Wars show. I love, like, there's a lot of location shots. It looks like they really kind of did their work here to make it look cool. So I really do wonder, like, how this is going to compare to the rest of the show. Is this going to be a really personal journey? You said there's a huge cast list, but it also kind of looks like it could be this really personal stakes of, like, these individual problems of Cassian Andor and his kind of origin and his growth. So I'm curious to see how they can balance all of those speaking roles you just mentioned while having it still feel like an Andor show about Cassian.
Yeah, it definitely looked great. It's just like a little bit of a teaser trailer, which surprised me as we, Tristan and I, kind of rewatched the trailer right before we went live. And I was talking that, you know, marketing for movies and television has changed so much that like 3 years ago, if we saw this trailer, it would have basically said like coming summer 2023 or coming fall 2024. And now it's basically like you get a teaser trailer and they're like coming in 2 months. And so it still doesn't like compute for me that it's August, right? So that's 3 months away basically from now. And we're getting our first teaser, which is craziness. But I'm excited.
Yeah, I remember back in the day I had to go out of my way on Thanksgiving of 2014 to see a teaser for Star Wars The Force Awakens over a year in advance before it came out.
Yeah.
And now, you know, I'm seeing trailers for stuff a couple of months before it's out. I think I like this way better. You know, it's cool to almost forget about it until it's all of a sudden coming out, you know. And Andor was kind of like on the radar, but now this trailer comes out and you're like, oh, that's right, it is coming out. No, it actually looks really good, and I only gotta wait 2 months. That's pretty good. You know, it's better than saying, oh, I gotta wait a year and a half, and then there's gonna be a pandemic that makes it another year and a half, and you know what, let's just wait. They're playing the short game now, I think.
Yeah, I think studios are realizing, like, there's no point in people being hyped for your project a year before it comes out, because there's so much coming out now, people forget. Like, so many times that fans just feel like studios and marketing teams that are paid millions upon millions of dollars keep dropping the ball. Like, I remember when we hadn't gotten a Spider-Man No Way Home trailer yet, fans were like, where's this trailer? Like, what's happening? You know, Marvel or Disney's dropping the ball, and then it has the fifth highest gross opening of all time. And
I think with these streaming platforms, you're especially seeing short windows because they're trying to fight against churn. You know, they don't want people to cancel their account. So they want you to be, as soon as you're thinking, maybe I might cancel Disney Plus and switch over to Netflix for Stranger Things. Oh, all of a sudden there's three trailers out for the shows coming to Disney Plus, and they're only a couple of months away. So you might as well stick it out, you know, and that's how they get you to stay around. I think no one's going to be like, you know what, I'll keep my Disney Plus because that show comes out in a year and a half. You know, they're going to say, I'll keep it because it comes out in a month. You know, I might as well just stay.
Yep. Give me just a second. I wanted to look at something really quick. So, yes, episode 6 of Obi-Wan Kenobi is on June 22nd. So, basically, just over a month. So, basically, if you're only subscribing to Disney Plus for Star Wars, you would just skip out on July. Unless, I guess, you wanted to wait an extra day to watch Andor, you could skip out on August as well. So yeah, there's like that little 2 month window, but something tells me we're gonna have an announcement tomorrow that I feel like a show may debut sometime in that window.
Any predictions? Which show?
My guess. Well, there's the Bad Batch panel tomorrow at Star Wars Celebration. So my guess is sometime in the July August window we may have a Bad Batch debut, and we will talk about why in just a minute. Anything else you want to say about the Andor trailer before we
No, I can't wait. I'm loving all the prequel representation going on Disney Plus right now. Mm-hmm. Give me some more prequel love.
Definitely. So next, we're going to talk about Skeleton Crew, show we don't know much about. It kind of takes place during the Mandalorian timeline, post-Return of the Jedi era. It's got, you know, executive produced Jon Favreau, Dave Filoni, John Watts, who has kind of directed the recent Spider-Man trilogy. One thing I wanted to say too, as far as news goes, Rick Famuyiwa has been elevated to kind of executive producer role of The Mandalorian, along with Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni. He's directed a few episodes. He also directed the movie Dope a few years ago, so congrats to him. Back to Tales of the Jedi, stars Jude Law. And it's been kind of described as a kind of the Star Wars version of an Amblin movie with a bunch of kids going on an adventure together.
And this is called Star Wars Skeleton Crew, right?
Yeah, Star Wars Skeleton Crew. That's about all we know about it. It's kid-focused. They said it's kid-focused, but it's not necessarily, like, for kids, I guess I should say. Like, I think it's still going to be family entertainment, but it's not going to be something that's specifically targeted to like 10 and 11 year olds. I feel like it's going to be on the same level as like The Mandalorian or Book of Boba Fett as far as who it's aimed at.
And we know that John Watts is the famous Spider-Man director, I think you mentioned, is involved, and he has a very specific tone. You know, he goes for that kind of, you know, John Hughes high school fun tone. So it'll be curious to see how that fits into Star Wars. And I like Jude Law as an actor a lot. He's done some great TV work too. He was great in The Young Pope. Yep. I think he could elevate a show like this. And they mentioned even in the Moon Knight behind the scenes of like, sometimes they take unknowns and elevate them to star status, but once in a while they reach out to like these megastars and bring them in too. So this feels like Star Wars is doing that. They're saying, okay, we've made careers, but also we're going to get this all-star and put him in our show too. Yeah. So it's kind of a different approach.
I feel like, considering it's a show that's going to basically be kid-focused and have a lot of kids, I think he's either going to be playing, like, the villain or, like, voicing the droid that's with them for most of the thing. And I feel like, partially, you need a face you can market around. You need somebody you can market around. And for this show, because the kids are probably going to be all relative unknowns, You have Jude Law in there who can go on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. He can go on The Graham Norton Show. You know, he can go on Good Morning America when they drop the trailer. Like, I just think that's kind of partially why you get a known actor is when you have a role like this, when they're going to be surrounded by unknowns.
Yeah, I'll give it a chance, but I'm not honestly the biggest fan of his Spider-Man movies, so I'm not super sure how I'm going to feel about this show.
Yeah.
I'll give it a shot, though. Who knows? He could be totally win me over in a different universe. You know, that's a different world, a different tone. Who knows?
Yeah, what was it? The guy that wrote, like, the Scary Movie franchise went on to make Chernobyl? Or it was something like that. Or maybe he did, like, the Epic Movie and Date Movie and, like, those horrible movies and then did Chernobyl. I can't remember who it was, but... but something like that. Anyways, any predictions on kind of a plot or what you think the story might be?
No idea. I feel like the fact that they're going for the Amblin John Hughes adventure story means they're going to have like a whole kid focus. I could see it being Jude Law is like the Jedi Master and he has a bunch of very young Padawans and they get lost on a mission or something like that. That kind of devolves into some big chaotic mess. You know, when they tell that, give me that tone, and they have, like, the one big star, it makes me think of Mysterious Benedict Society with Tony Hale, where he was, like, the random Hollywood star in there, but it was more definitely a kid's show, but created a cool world and had a fun tone to it, and almost a similar kind of tone that this might have. So if you want some example of Disney going for a similar tone, check that one out. It's on Disney Plus. I think there's two seasons now of that. But, yeah, I definitely am thinking Jude Law, Jedi Master, bunch of young Padawans. They're on some kind of Willow-esque planet with a bunch of trees, you know. It seems like Star Wars now either has desert planet, tree planet, or like cyberpunk dystopia planet, and you get one of the three. But this one's probably going to be a tree planet, I predict. We got a tree planet one here.
Yeah, my prediction as far as plot is one of the group gets kidnapped by the First Order and is like indoctrinated into being a stormtrooper, and the other kids go on a mission to like rescue their friend and bring him back and kind of try to save them. And my guess is Jude Law is either the main First Order officer or like their droid or companion.
I like that. I'm curious what, because did they give you a timeline at all or anything like that
as far as when it takes place?
Yeah,
it takes place during the kind of Mandalorian era. That
you might have said that.
Yeah, and also the guy I was thinking of was Craig Mazin, who basically was the showrunner for Chernobyl, wrote Chernobyl, which is like this big, highly acclaimed 9.4 out of IMDb. He also wrote Scary Movie 3, Scary Movie 4, The Superhero Movie, Hangover Part 2, and Hangover Part 3. So good quality content can come from anyone, apparently.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with this. Jude Law, I'm in for Jude Law.
All right, and that brings us to another Star Wars content, and that's Tales of the Jedi, which is something that's kind of been rumored. There was a, I believe, like gift kit given out to Lucasfilm employees about 6 months ago, and it was all like known projects on, it was like Indiana Jones 5 and like recent projects. It was like The Mandalorian, Ahsoka, and like live action projects were written on one side, logos were on one side of the box, and on the other side of the box, it was like Clone Wars Season 7, Bad Batch, Visions, and then Star Wars Tales of the Jedi. And everyone was like, what's Star Wars Tales of the Jedi? And now we know it's basically an anthology series. Well, it's six shorts and set in the prequel era. And it's going to be streaming fall 2022, so fall of this year, which is why I think Bad Batch is going to be more summertime. And each story is going to be featuring a Jedi from the prequel era, and I know one of them is Ahsoka-focused, and it's basically kind of Ahsoka and her mother before she gets taken in by Plo Koon and the Jedi Order. And I know Janina Gavankar from Jedi Battlefront 2, the story mode campaign, is going to be voicing Ahsoka's mother. And then the other one is going to be young Dooku and young Qui-Gon Jinn. And Liam Neeson's son is going to be voicing young Qui-Gon. So.
Oh, wow, that's cool. And I'm looking forward to this. I love the era. You know, I mentioned I love the prequel representation going on here, but I think it'll be interesting to see how much narrative they can actually bring and how much it's just going to be like cool, fun shorts. I'm down for either direction, but it'll be interesting, like when they have young Dooku, how much they're going to get into like his storyline of his eventual decay. You know, are we going to have hints of his dark side there present in the story? And I really love the Clone Wars, and I think this is about as close as we're going to get to more Clone Wars content here. I wonder, is this going to be towards like the Visions kind of crowd? Is it going to be like actual complete beginning and end stories, long, slightly? There's still shorts, but are they going to be aiming for like a more mature audience? Are they going to be going for like the Forces of Destiny kind of crowd, where it's like, oh, you got a 2-minute short with Ahsoka running around fighting something and then it's over? Or are we going to be getting like at least full storylines similar to the length of Visions? I'm curious to see what they do with it.
Yeah, same. And I was slightly wrong, I guess. So Qui-Gon appears in 2 episodes, it looks like, just based on what I'm gathering here. One of the episodes, Liam Neeson's going to be voicing Qui-Gon. So Liam, I don't do TV, Neeson lied there. And then his son is voicing him in an episode where it's a younger version of Qui-Gon. So take that for what you will. Liam Neeson back to just voice Qui-Gon in an animated show. Okay.
Nothing else. Never, never any other shows.
Not going to appear in anything else. Okay. And then there's not much to say there. There were some image leaks as far as what some of the character models were going to look like. And it looks, the character models look very Clone Wars inspired. So I think it's going to be that kind of art, 3D style. And last thing we have to talk about is the Young Jedi Adventures, which is maybe something we'll end up covering on this show. Because basically the panel for it was, hey, we're going to be, it's set in the High Republic era, which is roughly 500 years before the Phantom Menace. Basically, like, hey, there's not really much content here for like my 5- and 6-year-old to watch. So it's basically content for 5- and 6-year-olds. But the creators of the show talked during the panel that like adults can watch it and enjoy it too. And they wanted to make something that adults wouldn't hate watching. It's going to be simultaneous. They said in the panel it's going to be simultaneously released on Disney Junior as well as Disney Plus. So I'm very curious to see how it turns out. I'm very much a completionist. If anyone's been watching our show for a while, they know I have spent last summer between the release of Bad Batch and the release of Book of Boba Fett watching all canon Star Wars video content in chronological order. So it's going to be very hard for me not to check it out. And so I really hope there's enough in there for adults that I don't hate myself while I watch it.
Yeah, I think I've hit the point where if it's not watchable, I'm just not going to watch it. You know, you can review that one. You know,
I respect you for it. I wish I could do the same. Resistance is one of those things I kind of am glad I stuck out with, because while I wished it tied more into the sequel trilogy, I love the finale of that show, but there's a lot you have to watch that's not great to get to that point. But the finale I loved. I might just watch this after we're done, just because I haven't watched it since I did the full watch through. But yeah,
yeah, I'll check this one out. Who knows? When you hear Disney Junior, you kind of know what the tone is going to be. I think that it's going to be definitely game going for the kid, yeah. Kid crowd. But I think you could have said the same thing about like the original hand drawn Clone Wars animation. You know, that was definitely going for the kid crowd, but yet the action was very exciting and watchable. So I think if they can go for something like that, where sure the narrative is like uber simple and the characters and the dialogue are all very simple, but yet they deliver some randomly crazy good action with this lightsaber fights and things like that. You know, they promise, oh, you're gonna get fights, you're gonna be going through an asteroid, those kind of things. So I think if they can deliver kind of the fun iconic Star Wars action and new planets, new aliens, I feel like sometimes animation is almost a better vehicle to deliver cooler looking aliens and planets, because they're not really limited by what they can build or make look real. So we could actually get like better aliens and creatures and something like this than we were getting in Kenobi or any of the other shows that we're watching. So that could be one thing to attach to while you're watching, Joe. Look for the aliens and the creatures and the ships, you know, that's the fun stuff.
And Two things. Mandalorian Season 3, it was announced that's coming February 2023. And so, setting the rest of Obi-Wan Kenobi aside, my question for you is, because it's been very Star Wars heavy, what Star Wars related project are you like most excited for? If they're like, if Kathleen Kennedy came to you and said, hey, you can watch one of these starting tomorrow, what would you pick? Would it be like Mandalorian Season 3 and or Skeleton Crew, Tales for of me, Jedi, Ahsoka, like anything that's
for me, I'm probably going with Andor. I know that isn't necessarily like the popular pick from a lot of people. People probably want to see like what's next for Ahsoka and all the Rebels characters and that kind of stuff. But I think Andor has a really good chance to fill in some specific moments in the plot and also deliver on like the really watchable, exciting action of Rogue One. So I think if I'm looking to pay some big bucks to the Kathleen Kennedy, you know, Disney comes out and they're like, oh, pay us your all hundreds of dollars and we'll give you the whole season of Andor on Disney Plus right now. I'd probably do that. I'm really excited to see what they do with this large cast of characters, talking about how much of this is going to fill in that prequel to original trilogy kind of gap, the same way that Rogue One does, the same way that Obi-Wan kind of is. So, yeah, I can't wait to see what they do with Andor.
Yeah, I'm probably in agreement with you. The only reason I maybe pick Ahsoka is just more curiosity on what that show is, like how much of it is Rebels. Like there was a trailer leaked today because they showed like a little bit at Star Wars Celebration, and there's something in there that got me super hyped to watch the Ahsoka series. But I think if I could pick a vote of a full, like clean, not just like taking off someone's phone, but a full 2-minute Ahsoka trailer and Andor and watch those tomorrow, that's probably what I would take.
Yeah, I'm curious about Ahsoka, but I think the showrunner of Rogue War, or showrunner of Andor, has proven himself to make some good movie work. So more so than Filoni, yeah. Has necessarily proven himself as a live action director in my mind.
Yeah. All right. And I will say one final thing. Do you have anything else you want to say before we leave?
We had an action-packed episode this week. I hope you guys come back next week. We won't have nearly as much to talk about, but we will have more Obi-Wan.
All right, one final thing I want to say is last week, I believe we talked about the She-Hulk trailer and blasted it for how bad She-Hulk looked, and apparently they have done like extensive touch-ups on the character, and they did like release a few images, and she does look substantially better. So I'm a little more excited for that show. I'm also curious, if you knew you were going to do touch-ups and make it look better, why not wait like 3 days before you release the trailer and have the best version possible come out? But hey, they don't make me in charge of those decisions, because why would you want your first, you know, official image or first official video of your show to be not the best quality? But hey, I'm not in charge of that, so. All right, I think that wraps up our show for this week. And Lily will be back next week to talk Obi-Wan Kenobi Part 3. We'll probably, hopefully, be reviewing the Bad Batch Season 2 trailer. And maybe talking about any other Star Wars news that drops tomorrow. So, without further ado, goodbye. Hey, thank you for watching the Movie Change Up podcast. We'd really appreciate if you liked, commented, subscribed, and shared us with anyone you think might be into what we're doing over here. Thank you. Have a nice day.